On June 28, 1914, Archduke Ferdinand and his wife Sophia, who were from Austria, took a trip and traveled to Sarajevo, Bosnia. They were going to be driving in an open car that day. There was a group of Bosnia youth that were connected to an organization which were called the Black Hands. Now, that had nothing to do with skin color, but that was the early name given for the mafia. The original Black Hands from Italy were a group of men who were involved in early mafia activities, extortion and so forth. And the reason they call them the Black Hands is they would send a note on a piece of paper and they would take black ink and draw a hand. Or in West Virginia, they would take coal dust, dip their hand in coal dust and press it on a window. And it was an impending sign of danger. But these youth had planned an assassination to take place to kill Archduke Ferdinand and his wife Sophia at the train station. There were a total of six assassins that were set along the motorcade route. The Archduke and his wife arrived. There were several cars, and they happened to be positioned in the open air automobile in the third car. There were three assassins with bombs. Two of the assassins, for some reason, failed to act. The third assassin threw a bomb toward the third car that the Archduke sat in, and the bomb bounced off of the car but blew a 7-inch deep hole in the road, killing and wounding somewhere between 16 to 20 people. When the explosion was heard and they realized what had happened, the driver of the car sped up with the Archduke and his wife Sophia in the back seat. They ended up at the town hall for a quick speech. Then they wanted to go see the people who had been wounded at the hospital and pay them a visit. Their driver put them in the back seat of the car, and they began to drive toward the hospital. All of a sudden, the driver took a wrong turn. And the governor, who happened to be there also, began to scream, "Stop! Stop! You're going the wrong way. Stop." The driver immediately put on his brakes and he put the car in reverse. But when he did, he stalled the engine. That gave the opportunity for one lone assassin to come and stand at the floorboard of the car and shoot at close range the Archduke and his wife Sophia. 1 month later, because of this assassination, and because the driver took a wrong turn and was in a dangerous spot and didn't realize it, 1 month later, this event started World War I. World War I lasted for a total of 4 years, and World War I cost the lives of 17 million people. All because the driver of the Archduke's car made one wrong turn. I want to share something with you in a moment. But before I do, I want to give you an introduction. And as I give you this little introduction to what I'm going to share with you and get into it a little deeper in the next few moments, I'm going to share with you something personal. And it's not name dropping. I want you to understand this is not name dropping. That is something I don't like to do and I don't do. But it fits in perfectly with what I'm about to tell you just in the next few moments. Everyone has a certain potential. Everyone in this room at Warrior Fest, all of you young people, have something that God could assign you to, one thing. And you haven't done it yet. You haven't fulfilled it yet. You haven't seen it come to pass yet. But it's called potential. It's potential that leads you into your destiny. And it's the potential of what you haven't seen that you can see, but will motivate you to continue to walk with God long after this meeting is over and the lights have been shut off. There are those of you that have gifts with music. Some of you have athletic gifts. Some of you have singing ability. Some of you have leadership ability. There are those of you sitting here that are very, very creative. But you have potential. Somebody shout potential. G.B. McDowell was a man who was an evangelist that was very well loved and traveled the nation many years ago. Marcus Lamb called me when he was a teenager. And he said, you've got to see this man's illustration on John the Baptist. He took a head, not a real head, obviously, but had a head made of a man with long hair. And he had it on a tray with a big covering on it. And he preached on the death of John the Baptist, and he would pull that up, and there's that head staring at everybody. A little bit of shock value. But McDowell had a gift. When he was a young man, God taught him how to play the piano. It was a gift. It did not take months or years. He sat down, and he could actually begin to play the piano, and that's one of his testimonies he would give when he would preach. He was preaching in an area not far from where my daughter lives. And as the service ended at that church many years ago, a very handsome, thin, wavy-haired, dark-haired young man walked up to him and said, Brother McDowell, God gave me a gift. Can I tell you about my gift? He said, sure, son. He said, you know, you talked about playing the piano. He said, God gave me a gift of doing two things. I can play a guitar pretty good, but I got a voice and I can sing. He said, really? He said, yes, sir, Brother McDowell. He said, I want God to use me in my gift. Everybody say potential. And you know, it's amazing how God used that young man in his gift. And everybody here knows who he is. That teenage boy that talked to Brother McDowell, his name was Elvis Presley. Elvis Presley. And most people don't know this, but Elvis Presley was raised in the Assemblies of God Church. And Elvis's mother and dad could sing and play guitars, and they would bring Elvis to the front of the church as a young boy. And I know these stories because M.H. Kennedy, who was the state overseer of the COG in Virginia and Alabama, knew the Presleys personally. When Vernon Presley died and Elvis's mother died, M.H. Kennedy was one of the men invited to perform and assist in the funerals. The reason is M.H. Kennedy lived as a young man near a family called the Presley family and bought the first guitar because the family couldn't afford it. Now think about this for a moment. I've thought about this for many years. Elvis really had a love for God. Elvis had a gift. Everybody that's heard him sing knew it was a gift. But I've often wondered, because I see those old concerts, you'll see him occasionally on social media, where he is at Las Vegas, for example, or one of the major cities, and he stops the music, and you hear the Stamps Quartet or J.D. Sumner, and they sing, there's a sweet, sweet spirit in this place. And it's a song about the Holy Spirit. It's in the middle of an Elvis Presley rock concert. When Elvis was in the industry and going full speed ahead, they would sit at the piano at Graceland Mansion, and he would call all the singers together. And you know what they would do? They would sing gospel songs. Now, I'm not here to judge Elvis because I believe he loved the Lord. And I actually believe, you know, I know for a fact from a cassette tape that's out there that's never been released, that his mother came to him in a dream and told him he was going to die and also to prepare. And I believe his heart was prepared because when he passed away, there was a certain sickness that he had and he was taking a lot of pills for that. And I don't want to get into that. That's a whole side story. But what if Elvis could have somehow got connected to gospel and become a singer for his generation? I mean, I think to myself, what was lost? Because maybe he didn't follow a path. I'm not going to name drop again, but I can tell you that there are people that I know personally who are in the pop industry These individuals have 300 million people that have viewed their videos. Some have family that are in ministry in full gospel churches. Some were raised in, for example, the state of West Virginia. One girl I'll not name, but I know her personally. She was raised in West Virginia in the Assemblies of God. And yet she has some pretty rough music out there where I told her one day, I said, when you do your singing, put gospel out there and stop your cussing. And she said, preach, I think you're right. And God has really helped her. But I want to talk to you for a moment about the danger of losing your potential. God has helped me to be able to meet some very interesting people. Once again, I do not do this for name dropping. I do this for a point of illustration of what I'm going to tell you. We became acquainted with Lawrence Funderburk, who was played for the Sacramento Kings. He played basketball, 6 foot, 10 inches tall. And Lawrence was into Bible prophecy very heavy. He was a very good man, very knowledgeable man when it came to the Word of God. I went to Tampa, Florida, and I was able to meet a man named Anthony Telford, who was a pro pitcher. And I say pitcher in the sense of baseball. Two individuals that I've got to meet that I'm very excited to meet are Tua and Talia Tungavaloa. Tua has moved from Miami to Atlanta now. And Pam and I hope we get to go to a game where he is in Atlanta. Nick, you want to go to an Atlanta game, football game? And we were able to meet a family that I want to give honor to, the Kraft family. You had Robert Kraft and his wife Myra. That photograph you're looking at was taken at the Super Bowl. After they had won the Super Bowl, and there were about 15 people in a room, and Myra grabbed my hand, and we got to take this picture of the Super Bowl trophy. And the other picture is Tom Brady, who signed it to Perry Stone, a great fan. I've got to meet a young man. I've got to tell you this story because I was very impressed by this young man. We were at an Alabama football game. We were staying at the hotel where the team stays, and I was invited to join the team in their chapel. And not everybody comes to chapel, but there's probably 30 to 40 of the players that are under the leadership of my dear friend Jeremiah Castile, who is the chaplain for the team. And Jeremiah had taught, he had handed out an outline to all the players that were there. And most of the players, just after the chapel is over, they leave the outline on the chair. And I watched a young man, and I was so impressed. Everybody left but this one young man. And this one young man walked past those chairs and took every outline that had been left and collected it. One row. And I'm standing at a distance watching him. And then he came and handed all the outlines back to Jeremiah, who's the chaplain. And I said, that's why that young man is a good ball player. That's why that young man, he's going to go somewhere. And his name is Bryce Young. Quarterback for the University of Alabama in the past, but also an NFL quarterback today. Now, I don't give you these names, and there's other names I could give you that we have met with people. But I give you these names for this reason. Every one of these people that I have personally met had a potential. But everyone I have named to you as far as your sports athletes, most of them have faith. A lot of them have a testimony of their faith in the Lord. Many of them have made it very well in their field of what they have done. But then let's flip the coin around for just a moment. One of the greatest things that I could plant in your seed is when you become successful, you have to become more guarded. When you just have potential, you may not have as many battles. When you have potential and you haven't seen it come to pass, you might not have as many struggles. But the moment that God begins to use you and raise you up a little bit in the eyes of the public, and you have a voice to speak to a generation or speak to your people, you must guard your potential, because I have seen people with great potential do absolute dumb things. They go into a bar and carry a gun and get into a fight and end up getting arrested. One great player, never met him, but I know of him, shot his ex-girlfriend and killed her, and he's in prison. Potential destroyed. Another wonderful player, I never met him personally, but I knew of him, drove a car that he had. It was a sports car. They allege at 120 miles an hour and hit someone, killed him, and was sent to prison. I have seen college players that would go and get drunk or go do something totally stupid because they felt they had the privilege and the position of kind of doing what they wanted. And I've watched them get booted off of the team. I have seen them where maybe the pro teams would not take them because when they read the evaluation, the players, and I had a head coach tell me this, the head coach of one of the top college teams talk about this. He said, but you get to reading what you read about them and you discover that right in this area right here is a weakness. And that one weakness, if I put them on the team, could absolutely have an impact down the road. So they reject the person, even though the person has great what? Potential. Let me share another story with you that I think is extremely interesting. It's the story of three ministers. In 1946, the Baptist magazine did an article on young men in the Baptist church, evangelists, that were going to absolutely impact their generation. There was a man by the name of Bron Clifford and a man by the name of Chuck Templeton. Both were in their 20s, and both were having crowds in their events of like 4, 5, 6,000 people. There was another man that was starting out about the same time preaching, and that man was not even in the magazine, and that man was never listed. 10 years after the magazine was printed, by 1956, Clifford had died of cirrhosis of the liver. Templeton had left the ministry to be a sports commentator because war had been going on and he could not understand if God exists and if God was a good God, why would he let such bad things happen to people? The man that was never listed in the magazine was the one out of the three that ended up not only with the potential, but ended up using the potential God gave him and the gift God gave him to become a great minister. That man that was not listed in the magazine, who was just about the same age of Bron Clifford and Chuck Templeton, was a man named Billy Graham. Most people don't know this, but Billy Graham actually went to school here in Cleveland, Tennessee, when it was called Bob Jones University, a great Baptist college. And he preached a service, one of his early services, right up the road here at a church in Athens. That church still exists to this day. Some of you may not know the story that has been told that there was a girl that liked Billy Graham until she heard him preach. And when she heard him preach, she made this statement. She was going to break up with him because he would never amount to anything, that he could not preach. Yet in 1949, when Billy Graham went to Los Angeles, California, and put up a tent, thousands of people began to show up to that tent meeting. And as those people began to show up to that tent meeting, a newspaper owner by the name of Hearst heard about it. And he sent a reporter into the area there, into the services themselves, to do a report on this evangelist Billy Graham having a crusade there in Los Angeles. After seeing the results in the altar and some very famous Hollywood people coming to the Lord, Hearst said these words. It's two words, Puff Graham. Now, that doesn't mean anything to you. That doesn't mean make him arrogant, make him proud, make him puffed up. But it says that what that means is take him, write a positive article about him, and let the people read it to build up in the eyes and perception of the people how this man is being used. That revival lasted 8 weeks with 350,000 total people in attendance, with 3,000 people converted to the Lord. Amen. And so I say that to you to show you something. There's no doubt Bron Clifford was having success and Chuck Templeton was having success, but Billy Graham was nowhere on the radar in the eyes of a lot of people. But yet it was the one that nobody thought when they first heard him, that nobody thought would ever be able to do what others had done. But it flipped, the coin flipped. The ones they suspected would do great things did not, because they didn't finish the race strong. The one that they suspected maybe was the one that became noted. I mean, how many living presidents attended Billy Graham's funeral? That speaks for itself. Somebody give a hand for Billy Graham. Now, what I'm going to do in the next few moments is I'm going to delve just a little bit into some things that are very necessary for you to hear as it relates to your potential and understanding that the danger of what one wrong turn can do. One more time, as we read this text, give the Lord a hand of praise all over this building. Warrior Fest 2026.
Are you raising children in our increasingly dangerous, deceptive, and apocalyptic world? How do you protect them from spiritual darkness and the schemes of the enemy? How do you protect yourself, your family, and your church, and stand firm as the storms intensify?
Hello, this is Perry Stone, and I'm excited to announce that my son Jonathan and I have completed our first co-authored prophetic book, Children of the Apocalypse. This powerful 24-chapter, 277-page volume is overflowing with transformational prophetic insight and includes urgent practical protocols for you, your city, your church, and your children. 12 of the 24-chapter topics include Cribs in the Crossfire, Pornography, the Electronic Seduction, Infants, Children, and Pregnant Women at the Time of the Rapture, Secrets to Protective Prayers, Beware of Becoming a Scammer's Victim, Preparing for a Sudden Societal Breakdown, Forming an Apocalyptic Family Plan, Protocols and Wisdom to Outwit an Attacker, Protecting Your Church, Your Ministry, and Your Congregation, Dangerous Places to Be Living When the Birth Pains Begin, When Is It Time to Flee to the Mountains, The Curve That Rules the Beast, The Babel Effect, and so much more. I want you to order now and receive a limited first edition copy personally signed by myself, Perry Stone, and my son, Jonathan. As a special bonus, you will receive the new 2-hour series available on CD or digital download, in which I will present compelling evidence that we are now entering the major birth pain cycle of 2026 and beyond, along with another powerful message, unleashing the new pre-tribulation signs. This signed edition of Children of the Apocalypse is available exclusively through Perry Stone Ministries. I want you to order online at perrystone.org, or you can call toll-free at 1-888-21-BREAD. That's 1-888-212-7323, and request offer CA-153 for your donation of $30 or more. Or you can mail in your request for the offer number CA-153 to Perry Stone, P.O. Box 3595, Cleveland, Tennessee 37320. Your copy is waiting, so please contact us today. I will promise you, you will glean powerful new information and prophetic content. And I love the protocols, because we're going to teach you how to be an overcomer and how to deal with the serious challenges that are lying ahead as we are now entering the final cycle of the major birth pains before the return of the Lord. I am looking forward to hearing from you. And remember, your giving helps keep Manifest on the air. Give me your undivided attention for just a few moments. Really, I've got some things I want to share with you. Now, first of all, this is the last opportunity on the Manifest telecast. The book is available other ways, but through the Manifest telecast, and you can always order it through our ministry if you haven't, but Children of the Apocalypse, this is the last opportunity through Manifest that you have to get the signed edition of Children of the Apocalypse, signed by my son Jonathan and myself. First edition copy right here. I love this book. I'm getting a lot of comments about it from guys who publish books have told me, they said, this is the best one that you've written because it's practical. People can take it and use it. in their practical life. And also, don't forget, this comes with it when you order it, entering the major birth pains. And of course, we want you to get this because, can I tell you something? This is what helps keep Manifest on the air. Three things I've got to tell you. Number one, I want you to be looking for this. We're about to release the greatest partners benefit package to be a partner of Perry Stone Ministries. We've been working on this for 6 months that we've ever offered in the history of the Voice of Evangelism. And this is my 50 years of ministry, and we're going to do something big for partners from here on out. And so if you're a partner Strike Force member, you're automatically grafted in with this. If you're not a partner of our ministry in the Strike Force level, join now because you will want to join. Trust me, when you hear what we're about to tell you. So we're going to wait toward probably the end of May to, because we're having to get all this together now. We've been actually working on this 6 months. So it's a brand new partners program. Now, the second thing is in the end of July on a Thursday, all day Friday, and Saturday till 3 in the afternoon, I'm doing the Perry Stone Mentoring Institute for Ministry. My daughter's coming to do one session. Nick Walker's joining me to do one session. But I'm going to be the main teacher at the T.L. Lowry Global Foundation here in Cleveland, Tennessee. If you're called to the ministry, if you're in the fivefold ministry, if you're on staff, if you're a pastor, if you're thinking about starting a church, if you're thinking about going in ministry, or you just want to come to glean from information that I'm going to give you 50 years of things God has taught me personally in that period of time to help you in what you believe God has called your ministry to do. Now, we're going to put up registration soon, and it may already be up, to be honest with you, but it's a one-time fee of $95, and we're talking about hour after hour and day after day of 50 years of learning. And we also have a workbook and some other materials that we're going to be giving to you, and that helps defray cost of that. Then, in October, the 50-year anniversary of our ministry, Homecoming Camp Meeting. And I know that's coming in the fall, but I want you to set aside the date. I want everybody who's ever been to at least one main event to show up. This is the biggest one. This is the hoot nanny. This is the hoedown. This is the one. I can't wait. And I'll have to tell you about it as time progresses. But Pam's working on this, and it's going to be the biggest one that we've ever had in the history of the ministry. So that's the month of October. So we hope to see you soon. Join us in one of our meetings. Go to perrystone.org for our itinerary. And if we're coming into your area, we hope to see you there. God bless you.